my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me the hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey everyone, thanks again for tuning in and downloading my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. And if you are a regular listener, and I hope that you are, you know the drill by now. I work a really weird schedule, and I'm not able to stay up late on Sunday nights of pay-per-views. So this show is not going to be a recap of Night of Champions, but Chad and I, one of us, will have a review up on my123cents.com that you can check out in the next, probably in the next few hours, quite honestly. But you know, just the way life is and the way schedules work, we're not able to do a reaction show on the podcast, but we have the blog there available for you. But I do have a special guest today named Jake Sharpless, and he is from the website ruckus.com. That's R-U-K-K-U-S. And if you've read the SummerSlam blog that I posted a while back, over at my123cents.com, Jake had come up with a graphic about SummerSlam and some of the history behind SummerSlam. And he's also done one now for Night of Champions. And I wanted to talk to him not only about the graphic that he has come up with, but his website, what he does, and a little bit about the history of championships in the WWE specifically. So, Jake, thanks so much for joining the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about Ruckus.com and a little bit about yourself as far as your history as a wrestling fan.
So Ruckus is basically a secondary ticket website. So what we do is we have tickets to, you know, concerts, sporting events, theater, and we access tickets from ticket vendors and basically try to get the public the best deals on tickets possible. Personally do is I work basically on our growth team and our content team, because we've got a wealth of kind of data out there, not only for ticket statistics, but also just general sports and music statistics. So I work with our developers and try to come up with different angles and try to create content for people that I personally find interesting, and I hope that, you know, our readers and our fans find interesting too. So kind of this graphic came out of the fact that, you know, I'm a casual wrestling fan. I grew up in the world of The Rock and Mankind back in the late 90s, and I kind of recently rediscovered it a little bit with, you know, it kind of started with CM Punk and his whole tirade a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It got me back into wrestling a little bit, and ever since then I've been, you know, trying to get back into wrestling a little bit where I lost out in the mid-2000s, and tried to really catch up back with it, and kind of found it fascinating looking at it from more of a quantitative point of view, as opposed to, you know, we all know wrestling can go any which direction, and looking at breaking down the numbers I found really fascinating.
Yeah, and you've done, like I said, an amazing job kind of breaking down. For Night of Champions, for example, we know that Seth Rollins will become, according to the research here, the fourth champion, dual-holding champion, to defend both of his championships. And you can check this graphic out, of course, over at, you know, you can find all the information at ruckus.com, but you can also, I'll have it posted at jitterymonkey.com as well as my123cents.com, and links to get you to Ruckus as well. You can check out exactly everything that's going on over there. But the very first time this happened was back in 1994, Yokozuna defending the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania 10. Of course, beating Lex Luger by disqualification and then losing the championship back to the Hitman Bret Hart in a rematch from WrestleMania 9. Now, were you you said you started watching kind of in the late 90s. So were you aware of this this whole thing, or did you find this doing your research?
So I was, you know, I'm 29 years old. So I grew up with wrestling back in the early 90s, and I was, again, a casual watcher back then. And I really became kind of diehard back in the late 90s when Stone Cold was going at it, the Monday Night War. So I knew Yokozuna, but I was not, I wasn't there for the, you know, Hulk Hogan, Yokozuna, the WrestleMania, all that stuff. I kind of discovered that later on in life. But I found it interesting that, you know, there are a couple of guys that wrestled for titles, multiple titles in one night, and I wanted to really kind of dive into that as much as possible and try to dig up that. And I was really surprised to see that there were so few that have kind of accomplished what Seth Rollins is going for tonight. I know people aren't going to be listening to this until, you know, later this week, but I read that Night of Champions. I think that it's something that's really unique, and I was surprised to see how unique it really was.
The other one that you had, and I had forgotten about, is Goldust in 1996 at an In Your House event with the Intercontinental Championship, and then was wrestling for the, it looks like on the graphic here, he's wrestling for the World Heavyweight title, too. I don't have any recollection of this one at all. Can you talk a little bit about that one?
Yeah, I'll bring it up right now, but I think, you know, again, we kind of know the pay-per-views currently as these, like, huge monumental events, but we forget that back in the mid-90s, it was kind of like WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, were like the, you know, kind of the big ones, and maybe Survivor Series back then.
Sure.
But, you know, the pay-per-views were still, you know, I think maybe hour-long, maybe two-hour-longs by the end of the late 90s, but they were smaller events, but still pay-per-views. And Goldust, I dug up that he wrestled and lost for the Intercontinental Championship, and then also wrestled, I believe it was WWF Championship against Shawn Michaels back in, what was it, 96?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, you forget that, you know, we all think of Goldust as kind of this gimmick character, but he had a run there where he was kind of main eventing a little bit and wrestling for the championship, and you know, pretty impressive stuff when you really look at it.
Yeah, Goldust, you know, many fans remember him as Dustin Rhodes, obviously, in the early days. But Goldust, when he came to WWF back in the mid-90s, he was one of my favorites and quickly shot up as, you know, like you said, a legitimate contender winning the Intercontinental Championship. And I saw him actually in a house show that same summer against Shawn Michaels, wrestling him for the title as well. So, you know, some great history with Goldust. The other, probably the biggest of the matches that you have listed on the graphic for the dual championships is Chris Jericho at Vengeance 2001, when he became the undisputed heavyweight champion, beating both Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock in the same night, and he continues to boast about that even to this day. Now, you were back in the fold by then, I think, as a fan. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I remember watching the Y2J years and kind of that ominous, like, countdown clock that kept mm-hmm. on going on. And that's when I really got into wrestling, as Chris Jericho really hit the fold, as Rock was hitting his, you know, the peak of his popularity, Triple H, Generation X, all those things. So I very vividly remember, you know, Chris Jericho with back of the long hair, wrestling for these, and then boasting about it for a month to come.
Yeah, he did. You know, what I thought was the impossible. Now, let me ask you this, and like I said, fans, listeners, you know, we understand that this has already happened, but we're speculating now. Do you think Seth Rollins has a chance at defending both the U.S. and World Heavyweight Championships against Sting and John Cena, respectively?
I mean, I've gone back and forth on this like 100 times. I think, yes, I do think he's got a chance. Obviously, like, Seth Rollins is probably the, you know, one of the biggest names in the company right now. I can see him defending both. I don't necessarily see him losing both, but I can see him losing at least one of them. I've gone back and forth on the Sting match 100 times. I can see them, you know, or Sting winning. I can see Rollins winning. I don't think he'll lose both, but who knows? Which is kind of exciting to me because, you know, sometimes we kind of get a feel for what's going to happen, and it becomes less of a spectacle. But this one, I think, is what really excites me tonight is the fact that we don't necessarily know what's going to happen, and I think it's kind of anyone's game.
I totally agree with you, and I love the fact that, you know, this is not, as you mentioned, predictable, and so it is a crapshoot, and I could see, like you said, I could see him walking out with maybe not winning the matches per se, but at least walking out as champion for at least one of those matches. So it'll be interesting to see and see how they continue to build the story with Seth Rollins. And we're going to get back into Sting here in just a minute. I'm kind of following the flow of the chart that you made, the graphic that you made. And in 2014, I was fortunate enough to be in the crowd for this one at WrestleMania 30 when Daniel Bryan. Yeah. Daniel Bryan wrestled Triple H in the opener to become the number one contender to the World Heavyweight Championship, and then going on to that main event and beating Batista and Randy Orton. It was so, you know, I can't put it over enough. It was an awesome moment, and, you know, Daniel Bryan to see him finally, after all that build-up that storyline-wise went, seeing him kind of capture that gold and rejoicing in that moment. The fans, I mean, the arena went, or the Superdome rather, went crazy with the yes chants. It was an amazing moment.
Yeah, I mean, all I remember that entire day, I watched the whole pay-per-view from home. I was not fortunate enough to go see it like he did, but all I remember from that night is the closing with him, with, you know, however many thousands of fans that were doing the yes chant. I was out of my couch, like, on, you know, on my feet doing it myself. I kind of looked around thinking I was kind of crazy. But it was like, that's the kind of one shining moment of that year. And for the last 5 years of WrestleMania, that's the one thing I really remember was Daniel Bryan winning that title. So I thought that was a great moment. And it really, you know, that's going to stick with me for a long, long time. I hardly even remember the match with Triple H, even though I'm looking at it right now. It was almost a half an hour match. But I do remember him, you know, kind of standing in the middle of the ring. And it, you know, it was pure joy on his face. It wasn't, you know, even though he might have been, you know, scheduled to win it, the fact that he, you know, it was kind of a culmination of a lifelong career that hopefully will get back on track. Who knows with Daniel Bryan and the injury, but I was really actually excited as a fan to see that happen.
Yeah, it was, like you said, it was great. And yeah, I'm glad you got up and did the yes chant too, because you know what? We were all doing it in front of each other, and it's fine if you're doing it in the privacy of your own home too.
I'm sure I wasn't the only one.
No, not at all.
There was like people across. That's why I'm not ashamed about it. I'm not doing it.
That was awesome, though. But the other contenders here, Triple H and Randy Orton, both in the same night at No Mercy 2007. And actually, Triple H is the only one on the list that had three championship matches. He won the World Heavyweight or the WWE Championship from Randy Orton that night, and then defended it against Umaga halfway through the card, and then lost it back to Triple H in a Last Man Standing match. There's a period of WWE time, about 2000 probably to about 2006, 2007, that it all kind of gels together for me, and I don't remember a lot of it. So this was one of those situations until I saw the work that you put into this and looked it up, I had forgotten about it.
Yeah, so no, I'm the same way, because like I said before, I kind of fell out of WWE for a couple of years there. As I grew up, I think like many people do, and now they've kind of brought the product back to more of a, you know, you're not necessarily ashamed to watch it as an adult and really cheer outwardly. But I definitely fell off a little bit for a couple of years there. So, you know, this was more of a research portion of it for me. I did not watch these matches.
Mm-hmm.
but it was, you know, this is what I think is cool about looking at it from and going back and kind of researching. You know, it's great about the WWE is you can now, with the network and everything, and with, you know, people are now putting out extensive research about the history of it, so I can kind of go back and get caught up. Because in other sports, you know, it would take me forever to go look at, like, you know, I'm from Boston, I'm a Red Sox fan. Mm-hmm. To read about the hundred year history of the Red Sox, just kind of diving back into it would be tough. But for WWE, you can kind of, like, get the clip notes of it and get really caught back up. So I didn't really even know about this night until I went back and did the research. And I thought it was crazy that, you know, I don't think it's crazy at all that Triple H would wrestle three times in one night because, you know, he's been the central figure to the WWE for 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was crazy that, you know, he managed to win the title once, defend it once, and then lose it all in one night. You know, I don't know if we'll ever see something like that again, just the way the WWE is going right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing on the graphic that I find really cool, and, you know, I'm 42 years old, so Sting being 56 years old and 6 months going for his first WWF championship, and if he wins it, or if he did win it, he is the oldest WWE champion of all time. And to me, at age 42 now, that's not so old. 56 isn't so old anymore, but as a kid watching some of these guys on your list, I was like, Sergeant Slaughter, for example, I'm the same age now that Sergeant Slaughter was when he won the championship back in 1991. So it is kind of it's a great list. And Vince McMahon right now is, and I think people forget that Vince was even the champion at one point. He was 54 years
and a couple days
then. Yeah, and 54 years old, 23 days back in 1999. And I think he beat Triple H on a SmackDown or something, and then I think he vacated the championship a couple days later, right?
Yep, exactly. He vacated it, you know, obviously, in total matrimony, just let it all go. You know, he being a very, very humble guy, just let it go. But I thought it was pretty crazy because, you know, you really think of how physical wrestling is. The fact that some of these guys are still winning championships that in their mid to late 40s is crazy to me. And the fact that they don't necessarily even hit their peak until their mid-30s. You know, you've got guys like Brock Lesnar and everything. You know, they win it when they're young. But you don't think about how much of a career it takes in a lot of senses to get to the top. So I thought maybe, okay, like, it's crazy that Sting's got a shot at 56. But, you know, throughout the years, guys later in their careers have got a shot at the WWE title. And you know, to tell you the truth, Sting for 56, I think he looks pretty good.
Like, oh, absolutely.
He might not be the wrestler he once was, but I watched him and he could look, you know, early 40s to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the face paint on and everything, maybe that masks some stuff, but he physically looks pretty good for a guy who's, you know, almost a senior citizen or is a senior citizen by, you know, technically.
Sure. Now, do you think? Did you watch Sting back in the day? Were you a WCW fan as well as WWF?
So I wasn't. I was Team WWF till I died.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of did follow WCW just because part of the time back in the late 90s, you kind of did. You always checked back and forth. That's what they were going for.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew of Sting. I kind of knew his whole shtick. I knew he was kind of this kind of anti-hero. But I didn't follow him, so it's only been the last couple of years that I've checked in on the WWE Network to really catch up with how big of a deal he really is and was. So I missed out on him in his prime, but I do know, and I think everyone knows how big of a deal it is for him to be going for the WWE Championship. And when first the match was first announced, I thought he had no chance. You know, they're putting Rollins over there. Maybe he's going for a babyface turn. But the closer we get to it, the more I think, like, maybe this is kind of a lifetime achievement thing, and maybe he'll sneak out a win. I, you know, it might not be a clean match, but who knows? That's why I'm really excited about tonight.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's no telling. I mean, we just mentioned, you know, Triple H won and lost the championship in one night, so who's to say that Sting, if he does become champion, he doesn't drop it at Raw or, you know, you know, SmackDown or just, you know, a few days down the road as well. I mean, anything is possible, as they say. Does it bother you at all that, that Sting is 56 years old and wrestling a guy who is, I'm trying to do some quick math here, probably about half his age in Seth Rollins?
I mean, if I really want to sit here and break it down, yeah, it bothers me, but no, in the grander sense of it, it's like, this is all entertainment, so, you know, Sting can still bring it, and if they can put on a good match, then I'm all for it. If it looks like he's bragging and Seth Rollins is holding up the match, of course, but we won't know until we really see it.
Sure.
It doesn't bother me, because like I said before, this has been happening for years, you know, like, Ric Flair was in 1992, won it, when he was in 43 years old. Bret Hart was winning in his 40s. The Rock won it a couple years ago. You know, he's a freak of nature and has somehow like only grown physically since he left the WWE.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. But I don't really have a problem with it, as long as it's done the right way. If he looks like he's dragging the night and it's just kind of, you know, like I said, a lifetime achievement is given, handed to him, yeah, it kind of bugs me. But I think, you know, depending on how it all goes down, I wouldn't have a problem with seeing Sting as a champion in the WWE.
Yeah, I think it would. And I don't think that he necessarily needs it. Well, he obviously doesn't need it with the legacy that he has from WCW. But to me, it makes me wonder, too. They brought him over to WWE for a reason, I think, other than just to say that we've got Sting. So this may be, you know, a swan song for him, and then he goes into the WWE Hall of Fame, you know, at WrestleMania 32. In Dallas. I don't know. I'm probably putting the cart before the horse here, but definitely, you know, Sting is an icon. I hate to see him lose in back-to-back pay-per-views with, I say back-to-back as far as what he has done in terms of WrestleMania from earlier this year to now at Night of Champions. You know, I also don't want to see that legacy tarnished amongst the newest generation of wrestling fans who are kind of tuning in and seeing Sting really for the first time, unless they do go back and watch on the WWE Network. And we'll wrap up here in just a couple of minutes, but you mentioned The Rock, and he was number 9 on the list at age 40, almost 41, when he won the championship from CM Punk back in 2013. And like you said, I mean, of all the guys on your list, I would say, with maybe the exception of Batista, The Rock is probably the most, you know, young at heart, if you will, the most physically fit. And, you know, I didn't mind so much a part-timer in The Rock coming back and winning the championship and then kind of passing that torch to John Cena.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm all for seeing The Rock whenever and wherever I can. And if that's once a year, that's all right with me. We see it with The Undertaker. I know that's probably, you know, coming to an end sooner rather than later. And I know that The Rock has, or, you know, let's call him Dwayne Johnson now, because he's not The Rock anymore. But seeing him, you know, he's not like some of these older wrestlers that you see, and it's kind of sad to see them in their swan song, and they've dealt with 1,000 injuries, and you know, they look old. He looks like he's 35 years old, and he looks like he can bench press like a pickup truck right now. So to see him every now and then is pretty exciting for me. Whatever his role is, whether he's coming back from WrestleMania and just like doing an appearance, or whether he's actually wrestling, is great. But yeah, handing it over to John Cena, I think that's kind of it's a strategic decision on the WWE's part. John Cena, love him or hate him, he is the face of the WWE. And, you know, like I said, I grew up in the late 90s, and it was the Attitude Era. It's changed. It's way more of a, you know, family-friendly piece of entertainment now. So having John Cena as the face of the company is a good move on their part. And as much as I wish that, you know, there'd be a heel turn in the card for him, and I think most fans do, you know, we're all patiently waiting for that to happen. I think him, The Rock, kind of handing it over to John Cena makes sense. As much as I and some, you know, or many fans, you know, don't want to see that.
One more question for you: where do you think Sheamus fits into all this as being the Money in the Bank holder right now? could he cash in against Sting if he were to win, or would he save it for Rollins? I'm curious because it's been interesting with him having the briefcase, because that's another one of those unpredictable things I think that the WWE has put out there for us.
Yeah, do you want my real opinion?
Yeah, absolutely.
But my real opinion, like, they gotta, like, I don't think they should bury Sheamus, but if he were to go for Rollins or Sting, I think that's a big mistake. I think he's kind of like one of those second tier guys, and will be for a while. I just think that he doesn't have enough crowd support to cash in. Like, either heel or babyface, like, I don't think he's got enough pull either way for people to really care. So I think the smart move would be, you know, if you want to cash it in for another title, cash it against Cena for the United States Championship. I don't think cashing it against, you know, whoever wins tonight, I just don't think people care enough about him to really have it be worth it. You know, as much as it stinks, is, you know, he can definitely be an integral part of WWE, but I don't think he's ready for that spotlight matchup yet.
I agree with you, and I never thought about using it as an opportunity to cash in for one of the other championships, but that would be interesting to see someone do that as well. So it'll be cool to see, you know, that's what I always say. This is a continuous story. We don't know, you know, I try not to complain too much because I don't know what's, you know, in the cards for down the road. And it's kind of like the never-ending story where they're adding new things and new elements all the time. Jake, thanks for your time. Tell me, how can folks get a hold of you if they want to check out more about Ruckus? Ruckus.com, obviously, the website. Do you guys have Twitter or Facebook or anything like that?
Yeah, it's Join the Ruckus, and Ruckus, R-U-K-K-U-S. That's both our Twitter and our Facebook. And yeah, we're always around talking WWE, talking sports, talking music. We've got writers and content creators looking to provide you guys with the best content for anything. So hit us up. We're glad to talk to you guys, and we're looking forward to watching the matches tonight, because who knows, like I said, this is one of those ones where I have no idea what's going to happen. So as a fan, I really love when that kind of uncertainty is present.
Absolutely, and I'm glad that you reached out to me a while back with the SummerSlam stuff and updating it with Night of Champions. I appreciate what you guys do, and we'll share your links and get the word out, and hopefully we can talk again.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me.
Yep, thanks, Jake. Talk to you again soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks, you heard it right there. That was Jake Sharpless from Ruckus.com. You can, of course, check out Ruckus.com or at Join the Ruckus on Twitter, and look for them also on Facebook. Again, this infographic that he created is really slick looking, and I like it a lot. And it's going to be, if you're listening on iTunes, check it out over at my123cents.com or over at jitterymonkey.com. And again, I apologize for this not being a Night of Champions recap. I do want to hear from you guys, though, and find out what you're looking for from the show. Do you want more recap kind of shows? Do you like the previews? Of course, interviews. I'm working on some great interviews here in the next couple of weeks with some indie guys as well, and hopefully making some mainstay guys as well out there on the wrestling scene. So we'll cross our fingers and see what we can get, but thanks as always for tuning in to My123Cents the podcast, and checking us out on the blog, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all of that stuff as well. Again, we'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.